Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful F1 fans out there. A very heartfelt thank you for joining me for another wonderful race weekend. If you're hearing my voice, you know what that means. It can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you have joined for another brand new episode of F101. And as always, we're going to start this brand new episode off with some hot topics, things that you need to know. First off, the FIA has officially made the grid boxes, that's where the cars will park before the beginning of each race, 20 centimeters bigger on both sides. This comes on the tail of two weekends in a row where both Esteban Ocon and Fernando Alonso were over their parking spots and giving them 5-second penalties for improper start of a race. I think it's a very good idea. These cars are so incredibly wide, even with the rearview mirrors and how low the drivers are sitting. They can't always tell where the wheels are. They can't always tell where every single part of the car is going. I do think that it was a long time coming that they did implement this new rule. But starting from this weekend's race on, all of the grid boxes will be 20 centimeters bigger. Next up, new rules starting this weekend in Australia, that F1 teams will no longer be allowed to climb the pit fence after victories of their respected drivers. Now, what I mean by that is when you see some drivers or every driver when they cross the finish line at the end of a race, you'll see all the pit crew up on the fence cheering, leaning in, all this kind of stuff. Sometimes they're standing on the cement barriers or leaning against the fence. Sometimes, as last weekend, some of the Red Bull pit crew were actually on the fence leaning over. This imposed a very safety conscious FIA to come in and state that it is no longer acceptable for teams to do that. I understand the reasoning behind it. Some of these pit crew guys are kind of hefty boys. They're big guys because they're moving tires. They're, you know, moving wrenches. Like, they have to be bigger and stronger and fitter than the average person. It does kind of take away from the congratulatory mindset of the team when somebody wins. It's always nice for the driver to see their team leaning over, congratulating them. No one's ever fallen onto the track, as far as I can find out, in the history of F1. It is a safety reason. I do think it was, you know, it had to happen at some point. I'm glad that it did happen and not because somebody fell onto the track and got struck by a car. But moving forward, F1 teams will no longer be allowed to jump onto the pit walls and celebrate. If they do that, the team themselves will incur penalties. Some will be financial, and if they keep doing it enough times, then the team themselves will start getting point deductions from the Constructors' Championship. And lastly, the tire sponsor is something that a lot of people and a lot of companies want to be a part of. Pirelli has been the sponsor for Formula One for several years. They take a lot of grief. They take a lot of crap from the drivers and the critics and the team principals and all that kind of stuff when tires don't act the way that people think they're supposed to, or they don't perform as well as they should, or any kind of new compound that comes out before the drivers get used to it, they always whine, bitch, and complain. Well, Pirelli's contract is up in 2024. There hasn't been any conversation with Pirelli yet with F1 and the FIA for them to renew their contract. So there's been a new supplier that has thrown their name into the mix. It is Bridgestone. They do want to come into the Formula One again. They were a tire supplier to a certain extent in the early and late 90s. And then Pirelli kind of came in, take over. They had a much more superior product than Bridgestone did, which is why they became the official sponsor. So it'll be very interesting to see if Pirelli decides to keep going the way of Formula One, innovating new tires, and just staying up with the trends. If Bridgestone does come in, I don't know if they will be as up to date as Pirelli is now. I would assume that they would have their own research and development department that has been working on tires for Formula One and just motor racing in general outside of the actual organizations, like them kind of like doing their own due diligence and their own research and development. I haven't heard anything. I haven't been able to find anything. As soon as I do know, I'll let you fans know. But I always wonder how well Bridgestone is going to come in, if they're going to be a little bit behind, if it's going to be a complete disaster, if it's going to be an amazing success. I'm okay with the change. I mean, Pirelli has done lots of good in the history of Formula One. Pirelli has also missed the mark a couple times, especially when it comes to their all wet weather tires, like nothing but torrential downpour rain kind of tires. So it might be good for the sport if a new tire supplier comes in. I hope that if they do come in, that they're set for this challenge. I do hope that it's not more of a, these Bridgestone's going to give us more money to be the sponsor than Pirelli does, and it's an absolute shit show. We only have a year to find out. Like I said, Pirelli's contract is up in 2024, so at the end of the 2024 season. So we have at least a full season and a half, over a season and a half to go before they decide to sign a new contract or not. Now, with the hot topics out of the way, let us get to qualifying. First off, qualifying itself, it was a little bit up and down. And by that, it's because the weather wasn't exactly as nice as you would think as it would be in Australia on a race weekend. Generally, this kind of race in Australia, they do get a little bit of rain, but generally it's during the actual race itself, where in this time they had some rain during qualifying and for full practice, which did kind of throw a monkey wrench in some of the drivers' plans, as well as it did kind of, the lower temperatures did kind of mess with the soft tires that most of the people were using this weekend. As well as the Australian track now has four DRS zones instead of three. They did tweak the track a little bit since the last time they were there. They took out a chicane. They made the track substantially faster, but it is also a new track. So when they changed, when they took the old chicane out, when they redid the track, they also had to repave it, which means they repaved the entire surface. And that may seem like a fantastic idea to us normal drivers, in air quotations, normal drivers. But when it comes to Formula One and any kind of motorsport, you want a track that's well-maintained, but you want an older track. And the reason for that is when you put down new asphalt on a track, it becomes very oily for the first year or two, unless it gets major, major wear and usage. And this track just didn't get that kind of wear and tear. Formula 3 and Formula 2 are also on the same track for the weekend, but it doesn't make up for the fact on how new this track actually is. So it was a little bit slick, and then you compound that on top of cooler weather, and then you add a little bit of rain on top of that. The rain did dissipate and it did dry quite quickly, but it still doesn't help the condition of the track. If any of you guys out there watched Formula 2 or Formula 3, you could definitely see the evidence of a slick track. It didn't nearly have as much grip as, you know, let's say Baku does, or Circuit of America in Texas, or even Spa, or any of the older tracks that gets used quite often. So it was slightly entertaining. It was a lot more stressful than it needed to be. And the perfect example of that would be Checo Perez. Normally he qualifies very well. He's in a Red Bull. He's in a Rocket. He's the Mexican Minister of Defense because his defensive driving skills is fantastic. And in my opinion, he is the more technical driver of anybody that's out there. So when it comes to not great conditions, he's the one that generally shines the most, and even he was having trouble. He ended up going off track in qualifying, which generally it doesn't mean a whole lot. It doesn't mean that you're totally out, but in Australia, they still use old school soft gravel runoff areas. So instead of hitting the walls, going over concrete that's got like skid marks or skid pads on there, you're going through gravel, which is supposed to slow them down, which it does to a certain extent. But at the same time, when you hit that gravel, if you don't keep your momentum, you stop and you try to go again because the cars are so heavy, they beach themselves. And that's what happened to Checo Perez in first qualifying. I think he only did like three laps before he went off. He hit the gravel, he beached himself, so he started dead last. And this was the fifth time that he had gone off track the entire weekend. Full practice, qualifying, he went off the track five times, and everybody kind of took note and slowed down a lot, and it just showed how brand new the track was. It also showed how treacherous this track can be because it's so brand new and it doesn't have the wear and tear. Once you got past a certain amount of corners, I think we're talking corners 9 and 10, and I think it was like 2 and 12, I think it was, the track was ridiculously fast. Everybody was able to dry their tires, get their grip, and things were okay. It's just that, you know, some of those hairpin corners this weekend, They just slid. They slid right off. Little embarrassing for these guys. Really frustrating for a lot of them. Yuki Tsunoda in qualifying and in full practice again, swearing up a storm because he couldn't keep the car on the track, which is understandable, but totally avoidable. I mean, just because you just have to slow down a little bit. Don't take so much speed into that corner. A lot of them did in qualifying. They did slow down a little bit. A couple of the guys ran off into the grass, but were able to recover their red laps. And it just made qualifying a little messier than it needed to be. But besides Checo going off the corner and into the gravel, he never hit the wall. There was absolutely no drama, no crashes, no smashes, which is what you want to see in a professional qualifying from Formula One. So the guys that were out in Q1, Checo Perez dead last, Valtteri Bottas, then in 18th, you've got Logan Sargeant, and then you've got Joe Guan Yu, and then you've got Oscar Piastri. A little surprising that Joe and Bottas both couldn't make it out of Q1. Valtteri did end up having a few issues with his car. It did end up getting worked on, which we'll cover in the next section. The Alfa Romeos just didn't cover or carry a whole lot of speed this weekend. And then when you're looking at Logan Sargeant and Oscar Piastri, again, it's the first time they're seeing this track. The experience they have is not quite where it should be or needs to be in this case. And just an oily track. It was just kind of a bad day for some of the rookies today. Q2, more of the same. The weather ended up staying nicer longer, so the track didn't become as oily. You could start to see a lot of the tire treads, which gave these guys a lot more laps. The times definitely started to come down. They were going faster and faster and faster, and not just from the usual suspects, not just from Max, not just from Alonso, not just from Russell, but everybody started to pick up the pace and really feel like they were making a difference in qualifying, that they were actually going to make it. Except for, and it's kind of a harp on these guys, unfortunately, so far, it was another disappointing day for McLaren. You had Oscar Piastri out in 16th in Q1, and then when it came to Q2, Lando Norris didn't exactly do that much better. The track times were so close that if you to take the times from Q1 to Q2, Lando Norris only out-qualified Oscar Piastri by, I think it was 4/100ths of a second, which is still quite a bit of time in Formula One, but it's not a lot of time at the same time. They were just ridiculously bunched up just because of the speed and because of the track conditions. It's great that Norris finally out-qualified Oscar Piastri. I think it should be the third race in a row that he did this, but he's getting more confident in the car. McLaren, as slow as they looked, it still looked more consistent than it had been in the last 2 weeks. So I do feel like they're on the right track when it comes to their car development and just the drivers having that confidence in their driving skills with a car that they're not necessarily happy with. They're learning to compromise, gives them faster track time, gives them better positions in their race, and it just makes it for a more enjoyable race for them, and it also helps them learn a lot more what they need to further on down the season when it becomes like halfway through the season when they get their upgrades. They can understand what they did wrong at the beginning of the season and vastly improve upon that. So the five guys that were out after Q2, Esteban Ocon in 11th, Yuki Tsunoda in 12th, Lando Norris in 13th, Kevin Magnussen in 14th, and Nick DeVries in 15th. The AlphaTauris, they're making it into Q2, which is fantastic. Their team principal has absolutely, and has stated as such, that has absolutely no faith in the aerodynamics and the makeup of their car. It's not exactly something you want to hear from your team principal, but Yuki Tsunoda and Nick DeVries, to their credit, they're trying their damnedest. They're making the car work. They're not the slowest in the pack, obviously, because they made it into Q2. They are trying their best, and you can see them getting more and more confident with the car. Nick DeVries is the oldest rookie at 28, so he has the most experience out of all the rookies, but at the same time, he still has that learning curve, and when you get put into an AlphaTauri car, your learning curve is just that much steeper because you're expected to deliver in a car that it's not quite up to, you know, sister team Red Bull standards or Aston Martin standards by a long shot, but they're doing their best. Again, no crashes in Q2, no drama, no spinouts. So it was great to see. Moving on, Q3. Great Q3. Super fast. Track is officially dry enough at this point. You can really see what you call the run lines. You can see where the rubber from the previous cars and tires have been laid down. You can see your racing line. These guys are pulling in time like there's no tomorrow, and these guys are close. We're talking like thousandths of a second apart, which even in Formula One is ridiculously fast. And you've got some guys up there that you wouldn't necessarily think make it into Q3. Traditionally, Q3 is conquered and owned by Red Bull, Mercedes, Aston Martin, and maybe McLaren every now and again. Now you've got Williams mixed in there. Now you've got some Haas, which is the massive surprise of the day, in my opinion. Haas is hitting the top 10. You've got a couple of Alpines in there, which we figured they should be in Q3, but to see them together in Q3 is more encouraging than one would think. It's great to see Lance Stroll and then Fernando Alonso, the Aston Martins, they're owning this track. Ferrari's up in there as usual, but not as high as you would think. And for me, the biggest surprise and delight to see is that you've got Kevin Magnussen that makes Q2 for Haas. So that's where normally you would think, and he was the bottom end of Q2. So he's 14th spot. That's kind of where you expect Haas to be. Maybe from 14th to 17th is where you expect him to see. All of a sudden, they go out, they pick up the second old man of Formula One. They pick up Nico Hülkenberg, and all of a sudden, he's 10th in Q3. He's making it to Q3, not just by the skin of his teeth, but he's making Q3 very, very comfortably. When he made it to Q3, I believe time-wise, he was 6th or 7th. Like he's smashing these times above the rest of the mid-grid teams, which to me says that Günther Steiner did a fantastic job in recruiting him and that the research and development team has really spent their money very, very wisely. When you're getting what used to be a bottom of the barrel team, now you're getting into Q3. Are they competing with the big boys? No, but they're still in that conversation where you're talking about Max, you're talking about Russell, Hamilton, Alonso, and you're talking about Hülkenberg, which you would normally mention him as like, oh yeah, Haas tried. Yay, they're allowed to play, and that's pretty much all you get. But they're legitimately in the conversation now going, hey, he's kind of lucky to be here, but look at the performance of the car. If they have just a little bit more tweaking, he's going to be in the top five. He's going to be challenging the big boys once he gets a little bit more oomph to the car. So that was fantastic to see. Q3, relatively quiet. It goes as it normally goes. Max does a blowing lap, demolishes everybody and just sits in the pit lane and waits and waits and waits and waits. All up until about 5 minutes into Q3, and then all of a sudden the times are getting closer and closer and closer. And an old rival is starting to make noise again. They're poking their head through the door. They're coming in like a bull in a china shop. And we're talking about Mercedes. The guys that have complained and whined and bitched and moaned the most about their car all of a sudden come smoking into Australia. These guys are on fire. They are the Silver Arrows once again. They are on rocket ships enough that they pulled Max Verstappen out to do one more lap where normally he's comfortable. He's going to get first. Yep, he's good. At one point, Max Verstappen was fourth in Q3 because his car, either he was dogging it, he may have been sandbagging it. Maybe there was an issue. He needed to tweak it a little bit more, but he was fourth and he needed to really pull his head out of his ass and pull out a fantastic qualifying time. Literally with maybe a minute and a half left, less than, he does end up pulling it out. So Max is on pole position. Then right after, right behind him, 9/1000ths of a second behind him, you've got George Russell. And then right behind him, you've got Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso in fourth, Carlos Sainz in fifth, Lance Stroll in 6th, Leclerc in 7th, Alex Albon for Williams, top 10, he's in 8th. He's having an amazing qualifying and racing season. I think he's really going to be one to watch further on down the line because it looks like Williams is only going up. Pierre Gasly in 9th, and then Nico Hülkenberg rounds it out in 10th. The key here that I find very, very interesting is that I think personally from here on out, Mercedes is going to be definitely challenging, if not winning qualifying times and laps. They don't necessarily have the race speed to keep up with Red Bull yet, but they've tweaked the car enough that, in my opinion, they've left Ferrari behind. But Ferrari is now definitely, in my opinion, a fourth place team. whatever Mercedes has done, wherever they got their research and their new ideas or whatever the hell they came up with, is definitely working. And I think it's going to work from here on out. Mercedes will definitely now be a contender for second and third every single week in, week out. Again, unless something happens, if they crash, there's a technical issue, something along that line. But if Mercedes can stay technically healthy or technologically healthy and the car runs like it's supposed to, Mercedes is going to be in that top three conversation from here to the rest of the season. It was amazing to see. The only slight concerning thing that you can see in Red Bull or in Mercedes is that George Russell outperformed and outqualified Lewis Hamilton again. And it wasn't by like, oh, he passed Hamilton and he's so much faster. It's that Hamilton couldn't even reach George Russell's time. He was close, but close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, and definitely doesn't count in Formula One. Either you beat him or you don't. So I think both Russell and Hamilton are definitely going to take this as a win for qualifying three, that, hey, we're still behind the Red Bull by over a half a second, but they're destroying Ferrari. They're faster than Aston Martin this weekend. And it's just, be positive that it's starting to work, that the mechanical direction you're going into is starting to work. So stay on it, and they're going to be in the race. And that was qualifying. Again, super exciting to watch. It was a little tough to pay attention because in Canada, especially in Calgary, Alberta, where I live, these were late qualifying and late racing races, or early races, depending on how you want to look at it. We're talking about it starts at 11 o'clock, not done till midnight. Races around midnight, not done till, we'll get to that in a minute. But totally satisfying qualifying. Now, let's get to the race, the part you guys all tuned in for. Race day, race time. Race morning, depending on where you live. Again, Calgary, Alberta, pre-game show starts at 11 o'clock. Race is at midnight. What race are we watching, you're asking? We're talking about round three in the Australian Grand Prix, one of the fan favorites on the entire calendar, the home stomping ground of Oscar Piastri, the home stomping ground of our boy, the Honey Badger, Daniel Ricciardo. Distance 5.278 kilometers, 58 laps, top speed of 308 kilometers an hour, 14 turns, 4 DRS zones. The fastest lap was held by Charles Leclerc in 2022, 1 minute 20.26 seconds. And oh my God, the drama started before the race even began. Let's catch you up if you didn't end up watching the race, or if you haven't watched the race yet. I know some of my friends, they said they were going to watch it live. They ended up recording it. And at the time of recording right now, it is 5:28 p.m. and they still haven't watched it yet. So if you guys listen to this before you watch the race, spoiler alert, starting off the race, both Checo Perez and Valtteri Bottas do not start on the grid. They're starting in pit lane. Why, you ask? They both got brand new parts. So Checo Perez, pit lane start, he got a new battery and he got a new control electronics. So they call it a power unit or a power saving unit. It's just a fancy name for a battery. Yeah, they can switch out their batteries because a lot of the car is electric now, and that they use it for their DRS and they use it for helping pass other cars and all that kind of fun stuff. So he got his battery replaced and he got his control electronics replaced as well. Valtteri Bottas also pit lane start. He did get a new suspension setup put in, but more to the point and a little bit more serious on Valtteri Bottas' side is that they broke Park Firma to put the suspension in. So what that means is at the end of every race, or at the end, and at the end of every qualifying session, so you're done your qualifying and you park your car. Okay, now your car is in what's called Park Firma. For those of you who don't know, that means that your car has to sit untouched for a certain amount of time. This gives the stewards and the FIA race directors to pick any car out of the lineup and go, we're going to inspect this car to make sure that every part on it is legal. It's kind of a way to make sure these guys don't cheat. In Valtteri Bottas' case, if you have to replace a suspension system, they ended up working on the car during Park Firma. So they get a grid penalty for that, which I think is like 10 spots, but he was second to last. And then you're going to replace a suspension system, which they're using their last suspension setup. So they would have had another penalty. So he would have been at the back of the grid anyways. So when you accumulate enough penalties, that you will just start on pit lane, which means you don't do a warm-up lap. It's like a really big punishment. You don't get to start off the grid. You don't get to just blow out of the pit lane. You have to wait till all 18 cars in this case pass Perez and Bottas, and then they can go. It's a really big deficit, but it is to make sure that there is no cheating in Formula One, which I totally agree with. Now, the reason why Perez didn't get a Parc Fermé penalty is because they waited long enough where it's like, okay, you can take your cars back, and then they switched out the parts, in which case he still got a 5-point grid penalty. It's the accumulation of, so he ended up being a pit lane start anyways. So that's the difference. I know it's about as clear as mud, but that's how it goes. So in this race for the Australian Grand Prix, normally I would tell you from start to finish how it went, what parts you needed to look for, what parts were exciting, the parts that you need to keep an eye on and keep in mind for the next race, so on and so forth, anything that may have happened. But this race, oh my God, should have been called the Australian Gong Show Grand Prix, because that's what it was. There were so many rules and regulations that were put into place during the race. There were so many crashes. There were so many incidents that for me to go through the race in chronological order for you would not make any sense whatsoever. So we're going to switch it up a little bit today, and I'm going to tell you about the drama that happened in the race, and it's in chronological order, and then I'm going to tell you about the race outside of all of this shenanigans and gong showness. Okay? Does that make sense? Here we go. So the start of the race started off as it normally would. Max did not get a great start. He was passed by both Mercedes before the first corner, which for him is absolutely unheard of. Now, that being said, Max didn't get a great start, but both Mercedes had a rocket ship start. They were both driving appropriately aggressively against Max Verstappen. Max is known for having an aggressive driving style that if it's his line, or he wants that racing line or anything like that, he's just going to take it, and you kind of have to drive around him, or you have to react accordingly, or, you know, just mayhem ensues. Mercedes knows this, especially Lewis Hamilton, and they took full advantage of the fact that Max didn't have a great start. Max tries to defend as best as he can. He goes from left to right trying to defend the race line, but he has to go back out to the left to take the corner. Both Mercedes, especially George Russell, blows right by him on the first corner, and then Lewis Hamilton the next corner just blows right by him as well, just taking Max totally out of the race for a little bit. So we're coming up to corner three, and it's a good race so far. All the cars are super, super close, and then the gong showness happens. First lap, corner number three, Charles Leclerc gets bumped in the back by Lance Stroll. Now, they're so tightly packed together that it was not a malicious move, that you can call it an accident, but they call it a racing incident, right? So it's an accident. He didn't mean to. We're just going to chalk it up to a racing experience. These cars are almost 2.5 meters wide. You've got parts of the car you can't see for the wings and the tires and all this kind of crap. And Lance Stroll ends up essentially tapping Charles Leclerc into a spin, which is not a devastating move as is itself, goes into the pits or into the gravel, doesn't hit the wall, which is great. So he's okay. But like I had mentioned in the qualifying with Checo Perez, essentially what happened to Checo happened to Leclerc, is that he didn't carry enough speed because he couldn't turn fast enough, or he would have hit the wall, that he ended up stopping in the gravel, and then he beached himself. He tried to, and there is no slow reverse with these cars. There is no slow forward with these cars. They don't run like that. So when you hit the gas, you spin. And he beached himself into the gravel. So that's our first, very, very, very first safety car of the entire lap. We're talking, or of the entire race, we're talking lap one. That's the kind of race it ended up being. So everybody has to slow down. They're all in their formation again. It didn't take too long to get the car out of the way just because he was so far off the track, which was great. It only took, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 laps. And then they're racing again. So we're talking about lap five or six. Well, cross the line to make from lap five to lap six, if you're following me. They get one solid lap in, and then the second DNF happens. Alex Albon, and he had, and I mean, it was his fault 100%, and it was heartbreaking to see. He was taking a corner, and he overcooked it. It ended up being the same corner that Leclerc ended up going off. He ends up hitting the gravel. He hits the wall, and he spins. So normally that would incur another full safety car. Everybody has to slow down, and then everybody has to drive at a certain pace to get the car off the track or out of the way, and then you continue racing. That's generally the idea what it should happen. So we're watching this, and then all of a sudden you see a red flag. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. Why is there a red flag? He's not on the track. Race director and the stewards decided that it would be a fantastic idea to do a red flag because there was gravel on the track. So the gravel in Australia is quite big because it's meant to be like, I don't want to say fluffy gravel, but it's meant to slow people down. So there's a ton of gravel on the track, which is fine. It happens in any race, dirt, grass, gravel, whatever. You don't see a red flag. But they call a red flag just to get the marshals out to sweep the track clear. In my opinion, this was their first mistake. You don't need a red flag to clear gravel. Put a full safety car. Okay, I get that. You want to keep the marshals safe. Again, I totally understand that. All of this happens in the safety of the people that are working on the track and in Formula One. I understand this. But put in a full safety car and then let them sweep off half the track. Let the safety car know which side of the track is clear. Run them through, and then you've got like 4.5-5 minutes before they come around again. They could have easily have swept off that track in less than 3 laps, which would have been maybe 8.5-9 minutes. But no, instead they call a red flag. Everybody goes in, and now they sit and wait. Some of the guys are getting out of the car. Some drivers are staying in the car. This is the first tire change a lot of these guys will do, though, automatically, because you get a free tire change. So a lot of these guys went from, and it's only 7 laps in, but some guys went to their medium tires to hard tires. They're not going to stop, period, and they're going to just continue on with the race. Here's where the next pain in the ass rule comes from. Now stay with me. It's going to be a very technical episode, just so you know. When you restart a race, if the weather is less than ideal, you're going to do what's called a rolling start. So everybody, when the red flag is over, everyone will line up in their respective order, and the cars know which ones go next and so on and so forth. And then you are moving at safety car speed. So you're still moving around the track. And then the drivers get a warning. Next lap, safety car is going to go in. And then they continue racing through the rules that they have for a rolling start. Essentially, the guy up front decides when to just put the pedal to the metal and go fast. That's a rolling start. When it is ideal weather, like it is in Australia this weekend, they will do what's called a standing start. So another way to explain a standing start is it's the beginning of the race from the beginning. Everybody lines up in their little spots except for the car that is out due to a crash or an issue, whatever the case may be. And those 5 red lights count down again, and then it's go fast. So it's sitting still, what's called a standing start. You're standing still, and then all of a sudden you just nail it. This start works very well when everything is perfect, because it's a very hectic and it can be a dangerous start depending on what the first couple corners look like. Because sometimes you've got 3 cars wide that are going 160 miles an hour and nobody wants to slow down. Like it's that kind of, it sets them up for potentially over and over a dangerous result. So they did their first standing start. And we're good. Everybody makes it around the turn. Everybody starts to pass a lot. Everybody starts to get up to speed, and they're really starting to feel it. A lot of guys are getting into the rhythm. When it comes to Australia, you've got 4 DRS zones, which means you get what's called a DRS train. So everybody goes really fast at the same time. So there is some passing, but not a lot of passing. And just by the time we get into another rhythm, lap 18 comes around. This is our third DNF of the race. George Russell, he went from first at one point to a DNF. This doesn't happen very often, but he had what's called an old school engine blowout. So he's driving along, and then all of a sudden you see a big puff of blue smoke come out of the back of his Mercedes, and then all of a sudden you see flames coming out of the back of his car. Now, he's okay. So I'm okay with saying this comment, but if you are of my age, mid to late 30s, think back to those Batman cartoons and the Batman movies. You remember the flame that comes out of the back of the Batmobile? That's exactly what the Mercedes looked like. He had probably 4-foot flames coming out of the back of his car before he was able to stop. He's totally safe, and then the back of the engine just kind of engulfed itself in flames. Now, you would think that of all the situations, you need a red flag for this situation. I mean, there's a car that's on fire. It's a dangerous situation. You need to get the guys as safely as possible. But this incident and what George Russell does shows how mature of a driver he is. He's able to continue to drive to a safe spot at the end of the pit lane. So he didn't go through the pits. He went on the outside, kind of as if you messed up. You meant to pit, but you missed it. And he's able to pull off directly to the exit of pit lane. So he is 100% A, out of the way. The marshals are right there with multiple fire extinguishers. He's able to hop out in a safe manner, and they get the car under control in less than 2 minutes. It went from a caution yellow flag, or a virtual yellow flag, a virtual safety car, to a green flag. We're racing again in less than 3 minutes. It was amazing to see. It was fantastic thinking from George Russell. But unfortunately, he's done for the race. His car caught on fire, exit pit lane, and then again, we're off racing yet again. And we're good. We're hunky-dory. That is lap 18 of 48 or 58. It's fantastic. We're doing good. People are getting past. People are going fast. We're making up times, all this kind of stuff. We're good. Until now, this is where the real controversy of the race starts. And it can be a little confusing, so I'm going to go through this as clearly as I possibly can. Lap 53. Kevin Magnussen clips the side of the wall, and he didn't get hit. He just didn't quite understand how close he was to the wall. His back left tire hits the wall, shears the tire right off the car, and now all of a sudden, he's stopped. Okay, there's debris all over the track. The car is off to the side. So they have to do another safety car. Okay, safety car comes out. But now all of a sudden, instead of just letting them run, because we're at 53 turning into 54 laps of 58. Okay, what you normally do is another full safety car. Then the machine comes out, picks up the car. And where he had hit to where his exit was probably 200 feet. So let's say 3 laps. Going really slow, staying out of the way. It's nice weather. There's no rain. There's no wind. So it's a dangerous but safe situation, if that makes sense. If everybody pays attention and nobody does anything stupid, it can be fixed fairly quickly and still have some racing laps. The stewards and the race director, in their infinite wisdom, call yet another red flag with 2 laps remaining at this point. So now all the drivers have to come off the track again. They had that car cleared out in less than 10 minutes. So with a 10-minute warning, drivers have to be back in their cars for red flags. So everyone was back in the car, which is great. And they're racing again. But now you only have 2 laps left. So instead of doing a rolling start to get everybody up to speed, again, and I don't understand why they fucking did this, I think the FIA and the stewards and the race director need to have a massive meeting, or everybody needs to get fired. They do another standing start. And we've been lucky that we've gone 2 for 2 with no incidents with a standing start. But hey, the crowd loves it. There was issues last year in 2021. This has all to do with 2021, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's do the most exciting possible thing for the race that we absolutely can. Fuck safety. Let's ignore the fact there's only 2 laps left. Let's ignore the fact that the race has ran so long that the sun is now facing directly into the driver's line of sight. Whether you've got your visor down or not, you're still driving directly into the sun. So even if you're not squinting, you have nothing but massive shadows in front of you. You have no depth perception. You don't know where anything is. But hey, If the stewards and the race director say, hey, let's do a standing start one more time to make everybody happy, let's go ahead and do this. And that's what they did. They lined it up and they take off one more time. This time, Max bolts past everybody. Front three guys, which is going to be Alonso, Max, and Lewis Hamilton, because he's still in the race driving very well. They are off to the races. It's a clean getaway. So you're thinking, okay, it's essentially a sprint race, two laps, we're going to be good. Well, I'll be damned if, and some people may appreciate this opinion, some people may hate this opinion, but it is my opinion that here comes the Ferrari to fuck up the day, that Carlos Sainz comes in and he spins out Fernando Alonso. Okay, normally that's not a bad thing. Okay, they didn't result in a crash. It sucks for Alonso. He never hit the wall. He was able to finish the race. Okay, that's the good part. The bad part is that the chain reaction that happened is just absolute fucking mayhem. When that spin happened, Esteban Ocon hit the brakes. Big plume of smoke goes up. Okay, he ends up colliding with somebody else that you can't quite see. So he goes sideways into the wall and he ends up slowing down just enough where Pierre Gasly, who can't see anything because of the smoke at this point, at full speed or close to full speed, barrels into his own teammate against the wall. Car parts go fucking everywhere. Meanwhile, the cars behind him are trying to miss this. We've got two more cars that go off track. Logan Sargeant essentially hits Nick DeVries from behind. They both go in the gravel and they can't finish the race. Nick DeVries ends up hitting the barrier, but not very hard, but he's still out of the race. They're both beached. And now within four corners, you've got yet another red flag. Well, no shit. You've got desperate drivers who want to get points as badly as they possibly can. Besides Red Bull, who are far ahead, everyone's got a chance to be second and third. And even at the same point, if you get enough points against Red Bull, then you're going to be in the conversation for first. So these guys are desperate for points. They're also desperate to get this fucking race done with already. So many red flags. But now the entire track is now just littered with cars and parts. And you've got cars off the track and red flags. Okay, yet again, so they go back down into the pit lane, minus four cars now, because that's who they're getting off the track. It's just an absolute gong show. But the last, what I find insulting part of this is that normally the stewards would just call, there's one lap left, we're done. But you can't do that unless the cars pass a certain point on the track. So you have to complete a certain amount to get essentially positions, because there's so many cars side by side, they don't know who's in what place. So what do they decide to do? It's like, okay, so 35 minutes later, they're still talking back and forth, and the drivers, besides the top three who know who are 1, 2, and 3, nobody knows who's in fourth to, at this point, I think it's like 15th. Or 13th, something like that. So 35 minutes later, everyone's still wondering what's going on. The race director and the stewards come back. They have a new, what they call driver lineup. And you only get a new driver lineup when you're going to do, and say it with me, everybody, all at once, 1, 2, 3, another standing start. What the fuck are they doing with Formula One? You have no laps left because the leader went all the way around. So essentially the race is done, but there weren't enough people that crossed the line to get points. So in their ultimate wisdom, they decided, we're going to do another standing start. And the drivers are going, well, what are we doing for spots? Who's in what place? They finally get it figured out, minus four more cars. And they do another standing start. But they modified it now because they're geniuses, that the standing start was going to be from the pit lane. So everybody lines up and there's stewards running around going, Red Bull, you're number one. Mercedes, Hamilton, you're number two. Alonso, you're number three. You're number four. You're number five, all the way down to as many cars. And they line up one car after another. And they did this for pictures for the media in Formula One. They did a full safety car lap to say they finished the race. And that's how the race ended. That was the entire shenanigans. There was no passing allowed. There was no aggression whatsoever. You can go side to side to warm up your tires to look like you're doing something, but you follow the safety car across the line. Yay! That's how this dramatic FUBAR gong show race ended this morning. And by the time that happened, it was almost 2 o'clock in the morning. So I was absolutely livid on how they finished it. On top of that, Carlos Sainz, who was in the points when this was about to happen, was informed that because he caused a collision, because he hit Fernando Alonso, that he was going to be handed a 5-second penalty at the end of the race. And this was broadcasted. Like, the fans heard it. They started cheering. To hear Carlos Sainz, like, begging his engineers and begging his race director to be like, no, don't let them do this. Let me talk to them afterwards. Like, it was heartbreaking. You could hear the emotion in his voice going, we went through all of this, and he's the only one that ends up, as of right now, as of this time of recording, he's the only one that has received any kind of disciplinary action from all of that mess, the unnecessary mess. He gets penalized, which drops him out of the points. I felt so sorry for the guy. I feel that the 5-second penalty was absolutely uncalled for. They were so close together. Carlos couldn't go left. He couldn't go right. He just kind of went into Alonso. It would have been a race incident any other time, and they end up giving him a 5-second penalty. And to broadcast it and for the fans to be able to hear it and just the overall messiness and unorganization of this race from the stewards to the race director, they should definitely 100% be ashamed of themselves. So the reason why all of this happened, like I said, I had mentioned earlier, this goes back to 2021. For those of you who have watched Formula One in 2021, there was a controversial decision made at the last race in, I think it's Abu Dhabi. That race and that decision from the stewards essentially made it an even playing field for Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton to race. Now, they screwed up that rule where there was a collision. They should have done A, B, and C. It was a massive kerfuffle. They essentially fucked up their own ruling where it should have been a rolling start, and then so many cars should have done A, B, and C, but everybody messed up and a race director lost his job over it. So the overcorrection for that was what Australia ended up being today. That instead of being a rolling start because it might be unfair for this person and that person, let's make it fair and let's just do standing starts for every red flag. At the same time, the FIA and the stewards caught massive criticism for ending a race or potentially ending a race behind a safety car, which is why they didn't end the race. They didn't end the race when they should have behind the full safety car. I know it's not entertaining as a viewer. I know it's not exciting racing to end a race behind a safety car. But when you can see the race getting out of control because there's so many standing starts, you need to be able to understand this. And as a steward and as a race director, you need to be able to recognize this and be like, hey, I'm going to catch some flack for this. I understand. But it's safer for the drivers to actually finish the race. Because if they don't do the rolling start and they don't finish behind the safety car, you get bullshit like happened this morning. All of those crashes, all of those runoffs, all of this mayhem and confusion and I would assume stress for the drivers as well, 100% in my opinion is uncalled for. They should have finished the race behind a safety car. It's boring. Yes. Is it safe? Absolutely. And you should choose safe over viewership and excitement every single time. But they didn't do this. So now, where does the FIA go from here? Of course, they're going to be changing the rules and they'll be learning from their mistakes. Or how about you just do what's best for the drivers? If there's two laps left and there's sun's going down, they're staring into the sun, which is not safe. Yes, they're professional drivers. They've done it before, but still, there's a reason why you have the race during the time of day that you do. And you know the conditions of the track. Just finish the race behind the safety car. Everybody goes home. Everybody goes home safe. It saves teams millions of dollars because who knows how much Alpine is now going to have to pay to replace and fix both of their cars before the next race. It saves stress on the drivers and I'm sure the stewards and the marshals and everybody there involved. I really think that they should have done a much better job in controlling this race and determining what's safe opposed to what will bring in more viewers. So that's the calamity and the gong show that was the Australian Grand Prix. Now, for the race itself, yes, there was actually a race amongst all of that. It was a pretty good race. At some point, because the tire degradation may have been a little higher and that it was a little cooler than it was normally at that time of year, and because it's 58 laps, at some point during the race did kind of stagnate a little bit. And by that, I mean, everybody's so close to each other. Everyone has DRS. So everyone's going fast. Everyone is within a half a second of each other, but no one wants to take that risk to pass somebody else. So for about, I would say 10 to 15 laps, nothing changed. It was kind of a stagnant, like I said, a stagnant race from there on out. No one wanted to take a chance. Nobody wanted to push the envelope. They were close, but nobody also wanted to take away that opportunity that, hey, maybe the guy ahead of me might make a mistake. He might go wide and I can catch him. Nobody wanted to take that chance. But the pace was great when they were actually racing. These guys were taking turns like there was no tomorrow. A lot of these guys, they love the track. They love how fast it is. They were getting used to the fourth DRS zone very, very, very fast. They just absolutely loved it. They loved it so much that Checo Perez, who started 19th, or actually finished, he started in the pit lane. He was the only one making moves. He was passing left, right. He was passing on corners that you would normally not even think about it. But he loves this track so much. The car was in pristine condition that he was really the only one that was making moves that anybody really noticed. So the race itself, it was good. It was good. It was entertaining for the passing that happened amongst all of the mayhem. It was kind of nice to see Max not lead the race for the entire time. He didn't actually lead the race until the 12th lap. So he was really having trouble with Mercedes this weekend, which I think is a good thing. And again, this is coming from a Red Bull fan. I enjoyed the fact that he could not just walk away with the win, that he actually had to work for it. And it made me smile a little bit that he had to battle Lewis Hamilton again for pole and for first place. This time they played much nicer. There was no shenanigans between those two. That the history of those guys racing against each other has not always been the nicest, but everybody behaved themselves. There was no collision. And Max took that opportunity that when he was able to pass Lewis Hamilton on the straight stretch, Mercedes may have been in the lead, but it was like Max passed Lewis standing still, that you could definitely see the top end speed from the Red Bull was much faster and much greater than the Mercedes. They do still have some work to do, but overall the race itself, it was very enjoyable. And that leads us into the new section that I have started, and it is the story of the race. And I've got a couple of stories that they're related. They're good stories that you definitely, sometimes you may have paid attention to it, but this will definitely be something to pay attention to further on down the road. The first story of the race for me is Checo Perez and Valtteri Bottas. Checo Perez, like I said, started in the pit lane because of all these, just the two new parts. He ended up finishing the race fifth. And to watch him race, like I had mentioned before, it's like we're seeing a new era of Checo. He is no longer the Mexican Minister of Defense. He is now the Mexican Minister of Offense. He was passing guys on corners that no one would possibly think to pass on. There's not enough room until you literally break at the last millisecond, the last inch. He was taking full advantage of everyone else's complacency. He was looking very, very fast, very aggressive. I think we're seeing, and I say this tongue in cheek a little bit because this is still only the third race of the year, but with Perez's contract being up next season, that I think this is the new era of Checo Perez. You will see not so much driving for the team. It will be more driving for himself, because he is not just because he's out of a contract at the end of the 2024 season, but because he needs to start, and he's realized that he needs to start driving for himself, that he doesn't want to be known as the guy that helped Max win his championships, that he is his own driver, that he is absolutely capable of doing whatever he needs to do on the track to get those places, to get those points, and to prove not only to himself, but some of his naysayers, that he's not just a wingman, that he is not the, and I mean this in the utmost respect, that he is not just the Valtteri Bottas of Red Bull, that he can win races on a consistent basis, and that Max is not just going to walk away with it. So it was great to see him actually become his own person during the race and a little bit more aggressive than we've normally seen. The other person mentioned Valtteri Bottas. He started in pit lane. He ends up finishing in 11th. Now, that doesn't sound as enthusiastic as Perez finishing in 5th, but Bottas did it with a very quiet confidence that you don't see very often in Formula One anymore. He did this amongst everything else that was happening. He did it so confidently. He did it so quietly. He did it so reassuringly that even the commentators mentioned at the end of the race that amongst all of the hoopla and all the other drivers, that Valtteri just slipped up, like went all the way up, and nobody even seemed to notice. He was passing people with confidence, but intelligence. He wasn't as brazen, or as some people would say, reckless, as Checo was going into the corners. He's making the other cars do the first move, and he's doing the counterattack, and he's passing people with intelligence, not necessarily speed, because the Alfa Romeo, it's fast, but it's not top tier fast. So you have to drive smarter, not harder half the time. And Valtteri showed what smart driving can definitely do. As the season goes on, I do believe that Alfa Romeo is going to get better, and Valtteri Bottas is going to be in there. He's going to be that quiet assassin. He's going to be getting in the top 10 more often, and he's going to be snaking points from people who don't expect it. They're going to be talking about the normal guys. They'll be keeping an eye on Lewis and Max and Checo and Stroll and Alonso. Then all of a sudden, and Bottas, you're like, whoa, where did he come from? It's the precision driving that he has that will make him the driver that everyone will keep an eye out for. And plus, who can deny, if you've seen pictures of him, it's the power of the mullet that's actually giving him the superpower. The second story, and I just finished my informational rant, I would like to say, is that the gong show of the stewards and the race directors, that I think there's going to be massive changes coming from the FIA itself, but how they're structured. It is unfortunate that their decisions took away from the race itself. Because most of the other podcasts that I've listened to, the articles that I've read, and everybody else that I've been talking to, it's not, oh, the race was amazing, Max did great, or did you see Mercedes do this, or what happened to this person or that person? It was, the topic of conversation is what happened with the decision making, that they're so lax in judgment, and they're so gray in their decisions, and just making bad decisions in general. They're taking away from the actual quality conversation of the race itself. They're taking away from the drivers themselves. they are taking, in my opinion, they're taking away the essence of the race for fan approval, ratings on TV, and to make a certain amount of people happy. And I think that's absolutely wrong of them to do. I do expect changes to be coming, more rule definitions, which I think at this point, if you've got a rule in for racing, it should be black and white. There should be no gray area. I thought we had all this figured out after 2021, but I guess not. You're going to have to tweak the rules a little bit more, but it's unfortunate that the decisions that were taken by the race directors and the stewards and all that took away from the actual race itself, that it took away from the achievements of, yes, Max won another race. Some people hate to hear that again, but he still won a race. That guys still crossed the line. They still got points. There is still chance and time to celebrate the actual race itself and the points the teams achieved and the points the drivers achieved, not the conversation of how bad the officials did during the race to prevent such and such a person from getting a certain point, or it was just their decisions that decided the race. So I don't mean to bring the conversation down, but that for me is the second story of the race. Hopefully when we come to the next race, that it got all ironed out. Whatever needs to happen, happen. Whoever needs to, you know, protest the changes. And then we just learn from this mistake, these mistakes, multiple mistakes, and we just move on from there. Okay, switching gears, let's talk about something a little bit happier. We're talking about the driver's standings and the constructor's standings. As the race has finishes, the driver's standings are as is. Max Verstappen is still first with 69 points. Checo Perez is second with 54 points. Then we've got Fernando Alonso with 45 points. Lewis Hamilton is now jumping Carlos Sainz into fourth with 38 points. Carlos Sainz and Lance Stroll, who leaps George Russell, are both tied in fifth and sixth for 20 points. George Russell is down in seventh with 18 points. Lando Norris is up from 10th to 8th spot with 8 points. Nico Hülkenberg is up from 10th to 9th, or from, 10th to 9th with 6 points. And Charles Leclerc drops 2 spots. He is now in 10th with 6 points. Drivers' Championship standings, Red Bull 123 points. Aston Martin with 65, Mercedes with 56, Ferrari with 26, McLaren is up to 5th with 12 points, Alpine is down to 6th with 8 points, Haas is up to 7th with 7 points, Alfa Romeo is down to 8th with 6 points, AlphaTauri is 9th with 1 point, and Williams is at the bottom with 1 point as well. Let's also get to one of the most important parts of the race is let's tell you who placed from 1st to 10th. Max Verstappen wins, followed by Lewis Hamilton in second, Fernando Alonso in third, Lance Stroll in fourth. Wonderful day for Aston Martin, picking up some serious points. Checo Perez ends up in fifth. Lando Norris, great job for him today, finishes in sixth. Nico Hülkenberg is in seventh. Oscar Piastri, first points of his F1 career. We're talking eighth. Great day for McLaren, picked up some really very much needed points for them. Zhou Guan Yu was in ninth, and Yuki Tsunoda is in 10th. I feel really happy for Yuki Tsunoda. He had a couple of races, the last two and the last couple last season, where he would always finish like 11th, just out of the points. So congratulations to the top 10 of the Australian Grand Prix. Next race, folks, is the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. We're talking April 28th and 30th weekend. So we got a couple of weeks off before our next race. Another early morning race for us here in Canada. And it is our very first sprint race of the year. So qualifying is Friday morning at 7 a.m., followed by the sprint race, which is Saturday at 7:30 a.m. That only goes for an hour, so you can squeeze it in before you go to work. At least I know I will be. And then the race itself is Sunday morning at 5 a.m. Pre-race show starts at 4. So if you'll be anybody like me, you will be in bed by 9:30 to be up for the pre-race show and then watch the race itself live. And there you have it. That is your breakdown and your recap of the 2023 Australian Grand Prix. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you guys next time.